Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, this is your host Winkling with another hugely exciting show of Indie Film Wisconsin. Before Steve calls in, we bring him on there right away. Let me give you the great contact information, which is WCLINGMAN@WI.R.com. One more time, WCLINGMAN@WI.R.com. And today's guest, when he calls in, will be, of course, the famous, the good-looking Steve Zimmerman. He's a great guy from Kentucky, people. The hell with Hollywood. Lexington, Kentucky is where we all should be moving to for roles in film. I mean, they got it all. They rock. They roll. They're from Kentucky. They have women with southern accents. Some of them even have red hair. How? I'm telling you, how can you beat that? Anyway, I expect him to call in. And this is going to be a strange show because this is really a strange show. Blog Talk Radio has really, really, really messed up. And I'm going to see if I can fix this. Hopefully I can. This will be a weird show if I can't. What has occurred, I should be able to fix it. It's for some reason... same thing with Facebook, it seems. It's glitching out big time, and what it is doing is it's changing things at random, and for some reason, they decided to change the time of show. And here he is now, and I fixed it. Yay, go me. Steve, can you hear me?
Hey, Wayne. Yes, sir. Sure can.
Sir. I apologize for that, but I noticed that when I was looking at switchboard waiting for your call in, that Blog Talk Radio glitched out like Facebook has been doing today and randomly changed things, and I had to quickly go and fix it. I appreciate your courtesy for being patient, but I got to ask you this.
You're on time. It's 2:30.
Right, no. I was thinking more about how long the show was going to last. It had me scheduled for 5 minutes. I'm like, that would have been a very short episode with a god of film like you.
I'm flattered. I'm flattered. Thank you.
No, it's the truth. I mean, I got to say this, and
I don't know how to respond to that.
let's give me the background. I'll give you the background why I think that before we get into yours, which
sure.
is this. You know, I've had George, and I'm so bad with bad names. You know, I've had George on from ZB Films.
Yeah, Vanilla.
I've had the guy on, Mark Poole, I think, from...
Anubis Digital.
Right?
Yeah.
I've had him on. I've had them both on a couple of times. I think, you know, I've had George on multiple times. You know, I've had you on now. I've had other people from Kentucky on. You guys have always impressed me by the fact that you guys are doing it. This morning, you know, I'm here getting all these phone calls from people saying, oh, I can't do this. Oh, I can't do that because fill in the blank, you know.
Right.
And it's like, what the hell? Then you're going to tell me that you're professional filmmakers and you guys think your films are killing the Sundance? It might actually help. You actually did something, maybe really, truly.
Well, I mean, yeah, there's like Mark and George and all, yeah, they've definitely been at it. And, yeah, back at the Fright Night Film Fest this past weekend, yeah, I saw a whole lot of guys that are really, really hitting it pretty hard.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right on. So let's start at the beginning with you, sir, if I may. How do you get involved in film? I mean, what was your career path like?
Originally as a writer. I mean, that's where, you know, for me, the foundation starts, the story. And, so, you know, once I, you know, started getting some actual training in camera work and videography and, you know, in film and photography, as I, you know, got into later high school and early college, that's when I sort of started to get the skill set for thinking that I actually could direct something. And, you know, of course, you know, you blunder through a few student projects and things like that and kind of, you know, learn a few, you know, learn some hard lessons along the way. But,
sure.
but finally, you know, got to the point where I did a documentary, feature-length documentary, and I'd done a couple of decent shorts and then felt, you know, like I was ready to try to tackle something, you know, to possibly be released commercially, and that's kind of what led to eventually Shadows Light.
Okay, well, let's go back a little bit of time. I mean, did you wake one day up in high school and say, I want to be a filmmaker, or did you always have a love for film, or how did that come about? Can you give
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, since I was a kid, I mean, I have to admit that the movies that really inspired me to want to, you know, make movies are kind of like the epic type films. Like, you know, of course, I guess the obvious examples like the first Star Wars trilogy, and or the original. I mean, I guess it's episode 4, 5, and 6 now, but the original Star Wars trilogy and those kind of films, I mean, really, you know, made me, you know, see possibilities, you know, because the technology was there to do what, you know, starting to get to where you could do a film on, you know, with a kind of spectacular nature that you could, you know, have in a novel. And I thought, yeah, that opens a lot of possibilities, and that's what I wanted to, you know, that's when I kind of got the early notions that, you know, maybe one day I'd want to tackle that.
And so you went for it. Interesting. And you said you had some training in high school, but the high school, obviously the high school you went to had classes, or this had equipment for people to use, or how was that like?
I didn't get any, as far as in the high school itself, I didn't have a whole lot of formal training in high school at the time. I got that more when I went to college. But when I was in high school, I mean, yeah, we were, you know, dabbling around with, you know, video cameras and you know, just doing, you know, projects ourselves and things like that on the side. And that's kind of the early stage.
Okay, very cool. Now let's catch up to the modern day now. So you just got done with the film? Do I understand that correctly?
The latest one I did was The Sirens, and that's a horror film, and it's about 32 minutes in length, and it's on the Indie Movie Masters Festival of Horrors Volume 1 DVD, and we just screened it at Fright Night Film Fest, and it's going to be getting a pretty wide, much wider distribution release this fall around November. It'll hit the streets again. We got a larger distributor that's handling that series, and so hopefully you know, that's going to go pretty well. But that was made on a shoestring budget, but I'm really, really pleased with how that one came out, because it was probably the most harmonious shoot I've ever been on. Cast, crew, everybody got along so well, and there was, you know, attitudes were phenomenal, and it was just an absolutely pleasant shooting experience.
Well, okay. Now, how do we get? Now you mentioned your Indie Movie Masters a couple of times. Can you give us the web address for that, sir?
Indie Movie Masters, like I said, that's a project designed by indie filmmakers for indie filmmakers for distributing short format. You know, it can be, you know, up, you know, it can be a longer film, but, you know, anything less than a feature on VOD, video on demand, or DVD, and we've even got options for foreign distribution and so forth. But it's a and we're going to be doing multiple genres. Right now, the horror genre is the first one we've got out, but we're going to be getting out a comedy series as well as some other titles, and like documentary and some other things. But the website address is indiemoviemasters.com. And the cool thing about it is it's because it's non-exclusive, and so it doesn't acquire or tie down a filmmaker's property, and we only showcase two filmmakers per title. So it's not like you get a big flood of filmmakers. We really shine the spotlight on, you know, two filmmakers only, and you know, per release. And like I said, it's non-exclusive and doesn't tie them up in any way, shape, or form as far as using their short film anywhere else they want to.
Is there a cost to access the site, or how does that work?
No. If it's selected, that's the only cost that we have to recoup before we can, you know, split profits with the filmmakers, and that's, you know, just the simple costs of, you know, pressing DVDs and, you know, other small incidental costs, you know, of actually, you know, getting the DVDs shipped out to the distributor and all that. But it's there's no cost. We absorb all costs for, you know, pressing, authoring, you know, anything that needs to be handled with the distributor. All that is handled by us. The filmmaker actually doesn't spend a dime other than sending us their files if they have to send them physically.
Right. I'm sure there's some legal documents that need to be signed, all
that
good stuff.
Oh, yeah. And, that's one thing, you know, we expect for filmmakers to definitely take their time with reading anything paperwork-wise.
Yeah, I hear that. And I'm sure you're going to look at it and make sure that, you know, they have the release assigned, everything else that they need. Done.
Yeah, and yeah, we have to, you know, of course, you know, they have to sign a waiver that, you know, they've got all permissions covered on their end, and then we're not responsible if, you know, they haven't gotten a release on their end. Yeah.
Yes, I hear that. Yes, we have a guy up my neck of the woods who made a film, and he wants to sell it, and I don't know if he realizes that yet or not, but he doesn't have all his releases, and I can't wait till that day comes when he figures out that you really can't sell it until you have the releases.
Right, clearance, so forth.
That's right, because they do not play. Now, so what motivated you to come up with this, you and your friends, to come up with this site? What was your desire to do?
Okay, one, because distribution, I mean, like I said, most filmmakers, they go through the festival circuit, or they, you know, they might put up something for, you know, just like a download on online, or they might, you know, find a, you know, a small Amazon, you know, listed on Amazon or something. It's just so hard once you get past the festival process to find a way to make it commercially, not, you know, not on a huge level, because, you know, obviously the market is, you know, driven toward the highly advertised stuff, but something that actually could result in broader distribution exposure and, you know, hopefully some, you know, some income for filmmakers. So when they're done with the festivals, their short films, they have somewhere to go. And that's sort of the, you know, what we as filmmakers always hungered for. And so now, once we got enough experience in the industry to know a little bit more how distribution works, and, you know, to actually get enough credentials that we could set up a distribution deal with somebody, you know, we figured we could move forward and actually form something that we always wanted to have ourselves. And that's kind of how it started.
Interesting. And how many films do you think you put on the site so far?
Like I said, we only got one. It's our guinea pig release, more or less, as I like to say. And that's the one that Matt Perry's Murderer, and then my film, The Sirens, is on. And that's, you know, to show everybody what it is, how we package it, you know, show them that, no, we're not kidding around. It is professionally authored, presented, released, et cetera. And now that that's out, you know, we do have the first comedy title and the second horror title coming down the pike. And once those, I think, come out, I think a lot of filmmakers are going to be really interested in what we're doing. And once they see that, you know, it's something that, you know, actually doesn't tie them up and doesn't acquire their projects or anything, you know, doesn't, there's nothing nasty, you know, legally. And so once they see that, I think we're, you know, hopefully we'll be able to move a lot quicker and, you know, and actually have, you know, maybe, you know, many, many titles a year released.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think this is a racking good idea. Now, I understand that you have recently interviewed for Indie Movie Masters somebody that I've been starting to follow, which would be England Simpson.
Oh, yeah, she is wonderful. I met her at a kind of more of a literary convention, but does have a lot of media elements to it now, and it's called Con Carolinas out in Charlotte. And I met her in the spring, and she, I mean, just from the instant I met her, I mean, she just... genuine is the word I would use to describe her. I mean, she doesn't come, I mean, being in this as long as I have, I can smell out, you know, kind of a fake persona, you know, pretty accurately. And from the, you know, when I talked to her, I mean, she was just, you know, she's the win-win type of person. She's the kind of person that's, you know, not just out for herself, but actually is out to, you know, help others. And, you know, and I like that, because those are the people that I think are, you know, the ones that really succeed, I think.
I agree. I think you're right on. So some of your other things you'd like to do with the site?
Well, I mean, with, you know, it's neat you mentioned that. I mean, it's a spinoff of the site, but we, you know, started a blog series, and, you know, and that does interviews and kind of interview/articles of independent film personalities. It can be directors. It can be people that are running film communities, such as yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It can be people that, you know, even actors or actresses, like, you know, with England. And then we also alternate the blog interviews with our podcasts, which are, you know, available on iTunes and all that. But the podcasts are more focused on just a, you know, kind of one-on-one type interview format with similar types of personalities. And that's, you know, and we're not, you know, trying to tackle – we're trying to do everything well, so we're not trying to, you know, tackle too much. So basically every week there's either a blog interview posted or there's a podcast posted, and they alternate.
Cool. You're racking out like...
Pardon?
I said you rack out like there's no tomorrow.
Oh, it keeps you busy. Keeps you busy. Yeah, because I'm also handling one for my small press publisher to shine the light on, you know, on some excellent authors and small press publishers. So, you know, I'm kind of pulling double duty in a little way. But now that I've got my system worked out, it's not quite so bad. So I just have to keep scheduled to keep organized.
Oh, tell me about it. I realize I have to be better scheduled or hell breaks loose.
Yeah.
It could
snowball quick.
Yeah. And, you know, once in a while people make mistakes, it happens. But when you try to put yourself in the limelight to make things happen like you have, you can't afford it. You know, even though things will occur beyond your control, you know, nobody wants to hear about it.
Right. Right. Yeah, you gotta try to keep things on the even keel, and that's why, you know, I'm trying to keep to a very strict format so that I know I can handle now. And, you know, and it's nice because, I mean, the whole idea is, you know, because I think that there's a lot of very worthy people, and it's great to, you know, shine the spotlight on them because, you know, in building up other people, you build up the community as a whole, and everybody wins. And it seems such an easy concept, but I'm just shocked at how few people seem to comprehend that. You run into it in film, you run it in the book world sometimes, but so many people get territorial or they're, you know, just so in focus that they don't see that, you know, if we all build up the overall indie community, it benefits absolutely everyone and makes it more viable.
Right, right, because you help. Something I try to beat the choir over the head with a big stick is that you help your fellow filmmaker, you're helping yourself.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, and that's, you know, it builds up the whole market, builds up the whole, you know, the respectability of indie film and so forth from the mainstream public. You know, they'll start to take everything more seriously when you say I'm an indie filmmaker too.
Right, right. Because, you know, we see it now. I mean, I'm just talking about Wisconsin. You know, when I talk to the local filmmakers that we are, they get a lot of disrespect because they're not a public enemy. They're not a 300. You know, they don't have hundreds of millions of dollars or tens of millions of dollars to spend.
Yeah.
People say, you know, oh, it's just a joke. You like the stuff I see in sci-fi. You know, and that's usually not the case.
It's a shame. I mean, but, you know, but the thing is there's so many that, like for this past weekend, for instance, I saw a premiere of a new movie out of Louisville from Jason Crow and Ronnie Jonah and all them. They did, it's called The Legacy, and absolutely fantastic. You know, it's a little bit more an hour long film, but you know, I mean, just absolutely entertaining. I mean, keeps your attention from the minute it starts to the, you know, second it ends, and great pacing. The effects were good. I mean, everything about it was tight. I mean, and so, you know, there's a lot of good projects out there that are worthy that I think the public would, you know, embrace if, you know, like I said, you know, they're just a little more open to, you know, indie film on a commercial level.
Right. Now, what I really like is all the good stuff that's coming out of Kentucky. What do you attribute that to? Leadership from yourself, from people like yourself and others? Is it something in the water, the drinks that you guys consume in the bars? I mean, if you had to point to a couple of things that make Kentucky a great place to be making film these days, what would you be pointing at?
I, you know, if you want my honest response on that, I think it's just it's like the idea that, you know, we realize that nobody's going to help us here in Kentucky, so we better get it done ourselves, you know, because, I mean, I tell you, over the years, I have dealt with so many little remarks about Kentucky. It's, I mean, even in L.A. once, I was in a Hilton there, and somebody actually asked me, well, in Kentucky, do you have hotels as nice as this? You know, kind of inferring that, you know, we're all, you know, running around in cabins or something like that. And I told him, I said, yeah, I said, in Lexington, not only do we have a Hilton, but it's actually an even nicer one than the one we're in right now. And, but that attitude kind of is prevalent out there. I've encountered it, you know, quite a bit. And I think that's kind of what makes, you know, the Kentucky filmmakers in some degree maybe a little more self-determined because, you know, it's not like, you know, like I said, typically in our state, you know, a lot of the projects that have come in, a lot of them, they just would import their crews and things like that, mm-hmm. and not think that there's good people here that they could hire onto crews and so forth. And that has been changing a little bit, but I also think that because of that, it made everybody here get a little bit more on their game and you know, improve the skill set and, you know, the kind of motivation and determination to, you know, work, break through those kind of limitations or stereotypes.
Wow, this is very cool.
That's my theory, but, you know, if you want one.
No. I think it's a good theory. I do believe that it's rather accurate. Let me ask you this question then. Take a step back to Sirens. Can we get a little bit of a synopsis of what the movie's about?
The Sirens is a place kind of like a Twilight Zone Tales from the Dark Side episode, and I intended it to be as such. And it's kind of about three very chauvinistic, rich executives that basically offshored a factory that's basically is destroying a small town's employment base, and they are absolutely thrilled about it because they're making a giant fortune. And so they decide to hire a bunch of escorts to party for the night, and to the three executives, and they decide to leave their wives at home, as I say, and party for the night and celebrate the big windfall of money. And make a long story short, the escort service that they end up contacting actually are, kind of updated versions of the Greek sirens. And kind of what happens to them is pretty dark. But, I don't want to give away too much. But, yeah, I think audiences of horror fans and stuff will definitely enjoy it. And the actresses are definitely not sore on the eyes. They're definitely kind to the eye.
Let me make this statement right now clearly. Should you ever need help in casting women like that, please let me know.
Absolutely.
I'll be more than willing to drive down to Kentucky to help you out.
Well, I've had people tell me that they would love to see a feature built around it, and I've said, yeah, that'd be great. And I know that some of the actresses involved would definitely jump aboard if we did a feature. So who knows? I mean, might pull that together, and you might have to come in to be our one of our consultants when we get into the casting phase.
I think that's critically important. As well, I can act. I can play a really good fat man in a hat.
I tell you what, I will make a note of it right now. And we will get it done.
Because I think there's many movies that critically missed the important role of having a fat man in a hat.
Well, I tell you what, then I will be the director that becomes known for that. I will craft the best possible role in that regard.
And I'm sure that you will, because you've done so much. I mean, you write fiction too, correct?
Oh yes, that's a part that's right in the center of who I am, being a writer, and my main thing is epic fantasy, but I also am working on some short story and novella stuff, a la kind of Clive Barker, Books of Blood type of horror, so that's not been released yet, but I am intending to get some stuff out in the horror genre. But right now, yeah, it's primarily my first novel just came out this past spring, and it's called The Exodus Gate, and it's modern fantasy based around a character that has a paranormal radio show, UFOs, supernatural stuff, and he gets kind of brought into getting a hold of a virtual reality device that's actually a time-transcending gate that dark forces are using to bring back the Nephilim, which are the offspring of fallen angels and humans. Mm-hmm. And in my book, they're the basis for all of today's mythological creatures. So they take all kinds of different monstrous forms. And so it's an epic set in today's world. And then this fall, we're going to be getting out a new series, the first of a new series that's more traditional medieval type fantasy. And after that, every year we're going to try to get one book out in each series roughly every 7 months or so.
Okay. And where can we find your books at?
The books can be found on, Amazon.com is the easy one, under the Exodus Gate, Exodusgate. And the other place is online at Seventh Star Press, and that's SeventhStarPress.com. Or, of course, people can also link to that from my website and actually order them off my site, which is StephenZimmer.com, if they're interested. And you can get, and I'd be glad to sign them. And, we also, if they're ordered straight from me, I can also throw in some extra goodies like some art cards and, 8x10, some of the cover art and things like that.
Well, that's cool. Well, you are the busy guy to do all this stuff and keep things going straight and focus is incredible. Can you give us some clues on how you're able to do these things?
I keep notes, I definitely keep notes on what I have to do each week, so I don't overlook anything because, like you said, I am involved in a few things. I set aside my writing time for early in the day when there's not any phone calls coming in and distractions, so I tend to write early morning or late at night. And so that's the creative time. And then during the midday, is when I'm handling business or, you know, working on the interviews, the podcasts or whatever, you know, that's kind of the business time. So I separate the artistic from the, or the creative from the more practical business and keep them in their own zones. And I think that's the key, is not having them overlap each other.
Okay. Now, do you participate in social media at all?
Oh, yes. Yeah. The only thing I have not done, because I'm simply at the wall right now with Facebook and MySpace, is Twitter. That's the only thing I haven't given in and done yet, just because, yeah, right now, I mean, you know, I help with maintaining, you know, like I said, the Indie Movie Masters contacts and stuff. And so, you know, I do keep up with the MySpace for Indie Movie Masters. And then also, you know, I've got pages for myself on Facebook and MySpace and under SG Zimmer on either or. So you can find me under either of those. And definitely, I love to hear from people, so send an ad request for sure.
Outstanding. Let me ask you this question then. If somebody's in around the Kentucky, now you're from Lexington, correct?
Yeah, correct.
If somebody's living around the Lexington area and they really want to get involved and they really think what you're doing is pretty cool and exciting, can they get a hold of you and ask you questions and the like?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, it's one of the things I've always, you know, never shied away from, and I don't, you know, expect anything in return or I've never been like that. You know, I'm always willing to share advice, knowledge, or whatever whatever hard lessons that I've learned the hard way. I'd love to help up-and-coming filmmakers avoid those things if possible. And so, yeah, I'm willing to share at any point, and I think anybody around me would tell you that. That's the way I am. I've always been.
That's wonderful that you're able to do that. I think that gives you guys a big heads up on, so far heads and shoulders beyond other people, because you have that attitude as individuals. It's not all about me. What can I do to go and help you do something else?
Well, it's such a tough road. I mean, I'm sensitive to that, because it's so hard, you know, to, you know, get things done, you know, on the indie level, and you have to wear so many hats, and it really is so difficult. And I guess I'm kind of oversensitive to, you know, what everyone else is going through, having gone through it myself. So, you know, so I can't help it. I just want to help people, make it a little easier. that's the idea.
Well, I think that's important, because because so many people could simply, I'm doing better than I did a few years ago. I have a great career path laid in front of me. I'm making it happen. You're some young spunk out of school. Who the hell are you? And I don't care.
Yeah. You encounter some people that, like I said, are fresh out of film school and have some tremendously inflated attitudes. And I sometimes I have to kind of bite my tongue a little bit, because there's a, you know, because I'll be wanting to make a comment or two. But you know, I mean, you just kind of got to roll with the egos sometimes. And, you know, eventually, yeah, people, you know, learn along the way, you know, what really counts.
I would agree on that. Now, I know let's go a little bit weird for a second. When we look around ourselves and we see some of the movies coming out of Hollywood and what seemed to be one remake after another remake, are you seeing the same thing, or what do you think?
Oh, God. I've been you and I are like psychically connected, because I've been talking about that for the last several days. Even at Fright Night Film Fest, I was talking about that to a lot of people, and the thing that kicked it over the top for me is when I saw they were remaking Clash of the Titans. And I was like, come on. It's one thing, you know, like when Peter Jackson is updating, like, King Kong, you know, taking today's movie technology to a film that was made in the very earliest eras of filmmaking. I mean, that's one thing, and that's and there's an argument for that. But when they're remaking films that aren't, you know, more than 20, 25 years old, I mean, that's just gotten to a point where, I mean, they're just afraid to take risks, and there's just a sheer lack of original stuff coming out. I mean, what are they going to do, just keep making remakes of remakes? I mean, there's got to come a point where they start, you know, tilting toward, you know, some original stuff. And that's why I'm actually excited about the fact that District 9 did so well this past weekend, because, you know, it's actually not a remake, or it's not, you know, something, or a sequel, or a comic book franchise. It's something a little more, you know, a little more original. And so I was kind of stoked about that, because I've just been so frustrated just seeing, you know, and that is a point for people to look at indie films, because that's where a lot of very fresh ideas are actually being done. And that should be a selling point for the independent filmmaker.
Right. Yeah, have a new idea, you know, is always a good thing to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I was watching the History Channel and then going over to the Hercules 12 Labors, right?
Yeah.
I'm thinking, you know, any of those stories would make a great film.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we're taking something out of ancient mythology, and we can have a lot of fun with it. We have a lot of cool technology to use. We have a lot of new ways of thinking of the world. I think it'd be a rocking good thing.
Well, I mean, you've got, like, cultures like the Aztecs and the Mayans, you know, have tremendously rich mythologies, the Sumerians and Babylonians. I mean, there's all kinds of, I mean, worldwide, you know, in the Asian cultures, you know, in Japan and China and the lore that, you know, that they have there with, you know, their mythical creatures and you know, individuals and so forth. I mean, there's a ton of stuff to draw off of, and it just kills me. I mean, I think it just got to the point where budgets have just gotten so darn high that, you know, like the studios are terrified to take any risk because they, you know, they have, you know, such enormous amounts invested in even, you know, pretty basic films. You know, they're spending $40-50 million on films that don't even have that altogether much in terms of effects in them.
Right.
So.
Right. And now one of the things that we're spinning around up here is I belong to something called the Society of Creative Anachronism, which is a media league reenactment group. I'm sure you have run fairs in Kentucky.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're real big up in Ohio and so forth, yeah.
Yeah, so you understand what they're like. You know, same thing. And I'm thinking, you know, it would be cool. You know, we had a lot of people with the costumes. You know, we were talking more fantasy than anything else. But, you know, I had the people with the costumes already. We had the people like to do kind of a weird martial art, which is a lot of flashy stuff. You know, that alone would excite an audience interest. What interesting myth out there, what interesting story could we retell using film?
Sure.
You know?
I mean, like I said, you know, just so many that you could draw off of. I mean, there's no shortage, and there's so many that are untapped. I mean, so many that they haven't even scratched the surface of. I mean, because even like, you know, the ancient, you know, the pagan era of Russia, you know, before they, you know, before medieval, you know, the first medieval Russian state came around. I mean, there's some tremendous, you know, lore that comes from those early periods. I mean, it's, you know, I could go on, but I mean, there's just so many topics that you could tackle.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to me, the next time I go to a film discussion and somebody sits there and says, oh, yeah, I'm thinking I'm going to go and remake 9/11 Dead, I'm going to reach out and snap their neck.
Right. Yeah. I know where you're coming from. Yeah.
I mean, come on. Can't we think of something else? And now it's vampires. Everybody in the third cousin wants to do vampires because, you know, HBO is running True Blood. The, you know, Twilight series is out there running. You know, come on, people, let's be original. And that's why I think that's why I think a good writer comes in, because writers such as yourself have original ideas.
Well, that's a challenge. And even for people that, you know, are vampire writers or, you know, are doing a zombie film, that's the challenge, is to try to, you know, if you are going to tackle one of those things, you know, really make an effort to at least put, you know, like I said, an original angle on it or original twist, you know, something like that. That's why I think I really enjoy the Brian Keene books, you know, who did The Rising and City of the Dead, and
mm-hmm.
I think one or two of his books are actually on the road to becoming a major, you know, films right now, which, you know, I think would be great, because, you know, he actually connected his zombie lore to, you know, almost like Sumerian, you know, kind of demonic entities that, you know, kind of, you know, we're coming through into our world and reanimating the dead, and it had a whole supernatural dimension to it, and that was cool. You know, I mean,
right.
It's like neat when the, you know, and he's not the only one that has taken some angles like that, but he's a good example. But if you're going to use those, popular themes like zombies or vampires, I think it's good to at least, you know, get out there on the fringe and do something a little bit different.
Take that risk. Now, are you on a cell phone by chance?
Yes, yeah, I sure am.
Yeah, that's okay. We're getting a lot of static over the line here on my end. And I don't, there you go. Thank you very much. I take you shift to your position.
I can hear you good.
Good. Over here on my end is a weird buzz that sometimes comes when you use a cell phone. I think that you're so right because, you know, to me, the vampire falling in love with a girl who changes his ways has been done to death.
Mm-hmm.
You know, X number of people running away from the zombies and trying to figure out a way to survive have been done to death. So that being said, I'm looking forward to seeing if they really truly make the movie World War Z would be a fun film.
Oh yeah, yeah, that
you
would.
And there's some other ones like that. That would be an interesting thing to see. See how they can do it, and I think that would be an exciting situation. Though World War Z would make an excellent miniseries versus a two-hour film, but who knows what they're really going to come up with. Now, what other things, as a writer, where do you get your ideas from? This the stuff that you have dwelling about in your head, or after too much booze with redheads and bars, or what?
I wish it was the latter. I can't say that I've had, I'm not going to lie and tell you that I've had that kind of wondrous source of inspiration. But, no, it's probably the fact that I have a lack of it that makes my mind wander and come up with these weird ideas. So, but, so it's pretty much, I blame it on my mother because she actually read me the Lord of the Rings series when I was about seven,
And
seven, and read a chapter to me a night. And, I probably would not have picked up the book at that age and read it myself, but having her, actually read it to me verbally every night, it was just like, it was awesome. And, and it really got through to me. And I think that's what kind of opened up the whole fantasy genre fascination that I've had. And then, seeing Star Wars, the early Star Wars movies and things like that kind of popped it open. But it's, I've always liked the big epic kind of stories that, in which, because that's kind of like life, there's a big picture and there's a lot of small stories operating within in it as each of us do our thing. And that's kind of like the epic, there's tends to be, a lot of characters, each of whom are going through a different path that all is working together under the big picture. So, that's kind of what fascinates me on many levels with the whole epic fantasy idea. And then, I'm bringing in things that, aren't, necessarily things that we've seen or dealt with in our world, whether it's a dragon or whatever, but making those things live and breathe. I mean, that's a lot of fun.
I agree. It's actually a very, very challenge as a writer, too, to make it come alive in somebody else's mind.
Yeah. And I have gotten ideas for certain creatures and stuff, actually, from dreams. Because I tend to actually have very vivid dreams and often ones that have a lot of, weird, abstract and dark, if you will, type elements to them. So I have gotten a lot of ideas for monsters and so forth, actually straight out of dreams. I'll jot down notes right away if I have one of those, and I've tended to get some pretty good ideas that have made some appearances, and especially in the books so far.
Well, that's interesting. I've known a couple of people in the Southwest, writers as well, that keep a book at their bedstand and try to write down dreams because they see themselves inspired by them in different ways. Wow, that's very cool.
Yeah, so I can actually say that I've actually seen some of the things that I've got in my book, only in a non-conscious state.
Wow, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Now, well, this is kind of a strange question, but do you ever go to sleep thinking that or trying to work on the idea of getting dreams that can help motivate you in different things?
I would say yeah. I mean, because I actually look forward to dreams. Because I tend to have very vivid, big adventure type ones and very very visionary ones in terms of just the fantastical and types of different environments and kind of otherworldly type feels to them. And so I actually look forward to seeing what's going to pop on on the screen, so to speak.
Interesting.
So I can't consciously control it. I mean, but I'm sure that there's many times I've looked forward to it.
Huh. Which I think that's fascinating because when I'm no historical expert by any means, but a lot of the storytellers in ancient history got their ideas from dreams.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me ask you this question, and I apologize for interrupting. Have you read the Joseph Campbell books?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I need to reread them. It's been a few years, but yes, I have.
Wow. And would you recommend those books to both writers and filmmakers for the information within?
Oh, I think definitely, because I mean, it's just such a foundational type element, as far as things like the hero and hero's journey and all the different kinds of things that, you know, are covered. I mean, yeah, I think it's definitely a kind of a foundational type experience to read those books.
Interesting. That's absolutely fascinating. If you could, you have the money to sit back and take your time and make a film or read a book on different fantasy elements or horror elements, what kind of a thing would you come up with? I mean, you can't do it right.
Well, I mean, the book world, I'm not limited by budget concerns. You know, it's just a time issue. Mm-hmm. So I'm able to, you know, do what I want to right now with the book side. Film side, you know, I mean, you know, you have to be realistic. I mean, on the indie level, there are limitations. You know, I can't do a cast of thousands thing. But I would love to do one of two types of films. One, either a historical type epic, you know, set in the medieval period. And, you know, especially something like, I've always been fascinated by medieval Russia, you know, at the time of the Mongol invasion and things like that. And there are some filmmakers that are starting to tap into that kind mm-hmm. type of stuff. But that would be kind of an area that would be a lot of fun to explore, or, you know, a real crusade type epic. And, mm-hmm. You know, on some of the lesser known crusades, you know, and, you know, focusing in on, you know, not princes and kings, but, you know, some of the people that really went through hell just to participate in those kind of things and, you know, kind of their personal epics. That would be a lot of fun to explore. And then the other type would be, of course, the, you know, the Lord of the Rings, the Hobbit, the, you know, something that, you know, taking a major fantasy work. I mean, I always, the one guy they haven't done any movies of right now is David Gemmell, who's a great British author, right, who unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago. But
he has
a book called Legend, and, and it is absolutely awesome. Heroic, epic book, and I would I would do anything to do that in a film format.
That's a good book, and I'm sorry to hear that he's passed.
Yeah, because it was early, because he was only 57, so, you know, it was definitely way before his time.
Yeah, sometimes that happens. Godspeed to Valhalla for him. Now, what I really find interesting is you keep talking about the Crusades in Eastern Europe, and those pretty nasty events.
Yeah, but, you know, within the fabric of those nasty events, you know, you had some people that had tremendous courage and went through trying to sacrifice. So under, you know, even though they were awful events, I mean, under the surface, you had people that really were noble and doing things for the right reason. And that's what I mean by focusing in on those smaller individual stories as opposed to the, you know, the blood-soaked whole. You know, I think you can really have some compelling stuff.
I agree, and I'm sorry I didn't speak clear enough. I don't want you to misinterpret what I think.
I think
because they're horrific events, because, you know, things that, you know, we read about a little bit about in the Crusades in the Middle East, and people get freaked out about them. I mean, this is nothing compared to what happened, you know, in Lithuania and Prussia in Eastern Europe, right?
Oh, no, you're talking about the Crusades with the Teutonic Order. Going into those territories, yeah. I mean, there's some, and that's actually something that very few people seem to ever focus on when you mention Crusades. I'm actually pretty excited that you actually honed in on that. But there's a whole bunch of Crusades you know that have never been really covered.
No, they haven't. And you talk about the Mongols too, and I like history because as I mentioned before, I like to do the thing with the Society of Creative Anarchism, and it's a big history kind of group. A lot of people there study a lot of history. I mean, when you look at some of the stuff with the Mongols, when you have a handful of knights in European terms trying to hold off 20,000, 30,000 Mongols, knowing they were going to die.
Yeah.
But knowing they had to try, you know.
Right.
Is amazing. And you had, and I'm so bad with pronunciation names. I mean, that would be a good story. There's that guy, Hyundai, and I'm sure I mispronounced his last name, in the Balkans, who single-handedly led a guerrilla war against the Turks for 40 years.
Yeah.
You know, those are good stories. I mean, thank God that we have people like you that know how to find uniquely good stories. Interesting. Very interesting. So, if you know, those people out there who are thinking about doing screenwriting, I know very little about screenwriting. Some would say I know very little about most of the things I talk about. What help would you suggest is out there for people wanting to get into breaking into the screenwriting?
Do it. I mean, the formatting is a little bit easier now with the help of the software out, you know, things like Final Draft and whatnot, you know, it helps you, you know, at least stay true to format. And the trick is, you know, just having a, you know, making sure that you don't, you know, meander off in too many directions, and that you have a little, you know, little bit of structure in terms of, you know, I mean, you got a free flow style of writing, and then you have a more structured type of writing. And I'm kind of always been a hybrid. I have an idea where I'm going with a story. I know where I'm going to end and where I'm going to start, and kind of what the, you know, some of the elements in the center are going to be. But, you know, I tend to leave myself open to, you know, make some changes with certain characters and stuff, you know, in terms of getting to those points. But with a new writer, I mean, the key thing is just sitting down and actually getting through the process of writing out a scene, and, you know, doing some dialogue, and having somebody maybe read it aloud so you can hear what it sounds like, and get an idea of your, you know, if you're natural or if it sounds kind of clunky and stilted. I mean, it's just the fact of actually just sitting down and doing it, I think, that breaks the ice. And then once you start reading your own stuff and all, you're gonna start honing your skills very quickly.
Sure. I have a question that popped in the email, which is an individual, I can't make out where he's exactly from, but he's asking, he's out of a small town, there's not a university close by, but he has access to a really good library. Was there a book or two that you could recommend that he could take a look at?
A book or two I could top of my head, I'm drawing a blank. I just have to admit, yeah, I'm drawing a blank at the moment as far as a book. Yeah, I'm sorry. Just drawing a blank on a single book type to recommend.
Okay.
I'll have to give that some thought. I mean, I'll tell you what. I mean, on the independent process, I mean, it sounds kind of funny, but I would recommend the Make Your Own Damn Movie by Lloyd Kaufman.
Okay.
Because that kind of like do-it-yourself deal, I think, is very important to get, you know, especially when you're working without a lot of resources. And Make Your Own Damn Movie is, I think, if I were to recommend a book on, you know, just filmmaking in general, that might be, and hopefully it'll be available at the library, but it does get across that high kind of indie spirit and can-do kind of attitude.
Mm-hmm. Pretty cool. All right, we're going to switch topics radically now. Name, in the last year, the worst film you've seen in the movie theater.
The worst film I've seen. Good
Lord.
There's
so many to choose from, but you can do it.
Oh, God, the worst film that I have seen.
This year in the movie theater.
In the movie theater. God, you're going to ask an even tougher one there. I haven't really seen any ones that I would be just revolted by. That's the thing. I'm kind of... You know, without having a whole lot of extra pocket cash, I'm kind of very cautious about what I choose to see. So, but on cable, I mean, yeah, I mean, there's a movie called, one movie that frustrated me. It's a good, well-made movie. Don't get me wrong, but it's a movie called Fling, which seemed to, you know, actually work its way into a very unsatisfying resolution that had me mad for about 3 days afterwards. Because I invested, you know, an hour and a half to build up to that point, and then, you know, the ending was a very frustrating one, at least as I watched it. So I guess that would be the closest experience I had that actually got me a little irritated. But you know, at the same time, it was a well-made movie, and, you know, I'm sure other people might have liked it in the way it resolves.
Sure. I know my wife and I fight a lot about when we go to the movie theater, because the last ones I like, well, last live-action one I liked was Taken. You know,
oh, yes. I love Taken. Yeah, that was
Here we had people applaud at the end of the film. And then that happened a long time. You know.
Yeah, that and the other one, of course, that's the fantasy side of me, but I love Rise of the Lycans, the third Underworld one. I thought that was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that they actually did a prequel and they had really good creature design in that one, with the werewolves and so forth, the lycans. That was one that was a highlight.
Right.
And I've seen quite a few of the mainstream ones. And it's been not a bad year, not at all. So of the, you know, from the comedies like The Hangover and all, there've been some good ones out there.
No, I haven't seen that one yet. I'll wait till those come out on cable, because I too don't have all the money in the world we have to save where we can save.
And oh, yeah.
And eventually comes to cable, at least VOD. Now, let's talk about that for a moment. Are you involved with any web series or have any of those planned for the work in the upcoming work?
As far as like a webisode type project?
Right, yes, sir.
I'm not directly involved with one yet. I know some friends have been working on some pilot type stuff, but nothing that's evolved to, you know, that I've been directly involved with, you know, other than, you know, like I said, the people I know that are working in distribution and so forth and trying to, you know, come up with models for, you know, business models and so forth for webisodes. Aside from that, you know, that's about as far as it gets.
Now, have you taken the opportunity to see any, perhaps, even though you're a lot of time constraint?
I have, and actually the guest that you had on, Jeffrey Jacobs, I loved his stuff. I checked that out, actually, after that one interview that we did that one day.
Right.
And got to see that one, his series, and that was really, really well done and fun. And so, yeah, I mean, I do try to get on and check some stuff out, you know, when I can.
Yeah, we don't all that. We don't have the time to go and do as much as we would like. Now, have you tracked any, because you're an author, because you're a filmmaker, a scriptwriter, the whole nine yards, you've got to be at least aware of the alternative reality games and where those might be taking film to. Do you have any thoughts on that?
As far as, if you could just, as far as what in particular?
I mean, do you think there'll be more of that merging? There'll be more games utilizing film to bring different elements together to create a new reality for people?
Oh, yeah. I definitely see that's where it's going, and that's part of what's in the Exodus Gate, because the virtual reality device that they use in there is actually a game. It's actually, they think it's a game simulator at first. So I see a definite convergence that, you know, it's eventually going to occur, you know, in terms of, you know, those kind of alternate reality things. And I think that's, you know, right now, I mean, the online massive, you know, online player, you know, things like World of Warcraft and so forth, I think those are just the early kind of primitive precursors to, you know, the kind of thing that's going to come down the line, you know, where people are actually going to, you know, be in the World of Warcraft, so to speak.
Okay. Now, do you play the World of Warcraft by chance? Are you addicted?
I don't, and it's strictly because of time factor. I know that if I did it, I would burn up so many hours and not get much done. I've actually seen friends, or actually saw some people just almost like completely shut off because they got so into some of these games, and even knew of one kid that actually flunked out of school because he got too addicted to online gaming.
Oh, wow.
And I've seen enough to kind of warn me away from that a little bit, because I really want to stick to what I'm doing, and I know me. I would have an absolute blast playing it, and it would get to me, and I'd end up playing like 50 hours a week.
So. Yeah, I hear that. I know myself, it's hard enough as it is to stay away from the Facebook little things.
Yeah, so I try to limit. I do limit myself on gaming, because it is a temptation for me, and it's something I need to, you know, keep under control.
Right, I hear that. I've had temptations. I'd rather go hog wild about than waste time in a Facebook game. So you got to know more of the up and coming people out of Kentucky that even I, with my stalking of Kentucky filmmakers, allows me to know. Who are some of these people we should be keeping our eye out for, sir?
People to keep your eye out for. On the directing level, like I said, I really thought that what, you know, Jason Crow's movie that I just saw in Louisville, The Legacy, was fantastic. There's a guy named Jerry Williams who is making films right now that he's almost creating his own genre. He always describes it as Ed Wood meets something or other, and it's just the wackiest, offbeat, you know, crazy sci-fi spoof kind of stuff with all kinds of wild women in it and everything else.
He would
absolutely, and he'd surround you with beautiful women too. So, but he is I think the world of him, and they actually broke into a big chant of Jerry at his screening this past weekend. So I think he's definitely on the move. And
cool.
Jason Crow, I mean, like I said, The Legacy was just really impressive. I mean, just for everything that they did in that, and Ronnie Jonah, like I said, in that film, Nathan Day, who I think is a great actor. He's got a drama coming up called Bullet Song. It's kind of like a crime drama type movie, which is I've had the privilege of being around a little bit during the production of, and the early clips that I've seen of that, it's really amazing, because a lot of indie filmmakers, a lot of the features they tend to tackle around here are horror in genre, and his is a straight, you know, straight independent drama, and it's really, really well done. And you know, and there's a lot of really, really good talents that are, you know, coming in. I know, you know, George and Mark Poole, mm-hmm. and you know, then, you know, we have some great guys that are, you know, kind of keeping an eye on the scene, and like Nick Brown, B Movie Man, and right. he's also an excellent author, by the way. He has a book out called Blood Curse, Werewolf for Hire, and he's actually a really, really good author, and
yes,
and so a lot of people may not know that about him, but yeah, he's really a force around here, and there's, you know, it's really taken off. I mean, there's definitely some really good people.
And I want to give a shout out again, Mr. Brown, who I met at Keefe Lake, Michigan, the last one we did, was a single-handed force of nature. If you needed something done, if I even thought something needed to be done, I often would find Nick Brown doing it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's that kind of guy, never thinking once about, oh, no, you know, I'm tired, I don't want to do this, or I got to do this, or I want to watch this film. It's like, what more can I do to make It Came from Lake Michigan a success? And that's the kind of a thing, you know, I really, really appreciate about Mr. Brown.
Oh, yeah. And there's a real good, it's right on our borders almost, but Mark Raycop and the, you know, the Magic House guys, they're finishing up Starship 2. And I got to see some stuff from that when I went to In Conjunction in Indianapolis, that's a really promising. I mean, they put a lot of effects work into that one. I mean, some really nice CGI work and all. And that's coming right down the pike, and that's not too far from us. And that's one to look out for as well.
Well, I'm going to need to ask a favor of you, because I've been trying to get a hold of them to no avail. I'm hoping that perhaps you can say a good word for me and tell me I really don't really mean it when I say a fat man needs to be in their movie around naked women.
Well, yeah, he's just a busy, yeah, because he handles a lot of commercial clients and stuff, and so
sure.
He's got a small studio, and I know he gets swamped with that stuff. And
right.
And then Chuck Boudreau, he runs the Indiana group there, and they are super nice, and I've known Mark for a little longer because I'd run into him in past conventions at Dragon Con and so forth,
mm-hmm.
and did get to, and met Chuck for the first time this past July, but they also have a really good budding scene going that's actually interacting with, you know, some of the Kentucky folks a bit, which is nice to see.
That's cool. We only have a couple of minutes left of the show. Can you give out your contact information again, sir, please?
Sure. Easiest way to find all the stuff I do is at stephenzimmer.com, and that's stephenzimmer.com. My social networking is Facebook or MySpace / SG as in George Zimmer, Zimmer. And pretty much those three things will take care of everything.
Outstanding, sir. Outstanding. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you. I'm very, very, very flattered that you had me on today. Appreciate it.
No, the honor is mine, sir, because, you know, I'm going to soon call this Indie Film Kentucky, because you guys really rack out. And I hope to take some of the ideas that you do into Kentucky in a couple of weeks, say, hey, this is what we need to be doing in the state, and not wait for other people to do it for us. If it's going to do this, it's going to have to be us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got. Yeah, no one. Yeah, the skies are not going to part, and yeah, it's not going to shower down upon us. I mean, we got to go get it.
Right on. Well, sir, I really appreciate your time today, and we will be in touch with you soon. I'm in awe of your answers.
Well, thank you. I am definitely humbled and flattered, and thanks for having me today.
All right. Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. What a great man. What a great, great man. Steve is just the cat's meow. He does so much, and I'm so proud to have him in the show. And, again, to his leadership by example, his wanting to help other people, the fact he's actually doing things. I mean, I know any number of people that bitch and complain, I can't get my movie shown, I can't get my movie shown. Boom, he comes up a way to get other people's stuff out there. Nice little English girl is just going to be in a short countdown, so I got to hurry through this. Anyway, it's great to have Steve on the show. I'm looking to do different things with him down the line. I'm sure I'll make a great fat man surrounded by naked girls in the next film he makes. I can be a fat man in your film too, especially if there's naked girls. Trust me when I say that. Again, contact information for me is wclingman@wi.rr.com. Give me a ping. Tell me what you think of the show. Give me ideas, please, because this show is all about you. And with that, you guys all out there, have a great day, and we will talk to you soon. Thanks again for listening to yet another cool, exciting show of Indie Film Wisconsin. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.